Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of our OmniTalk Spotlight series, where we highlight the companies and individuals who are innovating in the retail space. We are very excited today. I'm here again with Anne Mazinga, as always. And we're excited today because today we're spotlighting a company that, quite frankly, we've known for a long time. I think I first met this company back last summer. I can remember sitting having a conversation out on a rooftop bar outside a bar in Minneapolis and getting to know a little bit more about this company. And that company is Engagement Agents. And so I'd like to welcome to the OmniTalk Spotlight program, Sean Snyder, the president of Engagement Agents. Sean, how are you doing today?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Chris and Anne. Look forward to speaking with you.
Absolutely. Now, see, the reason I'm excited, Sean, you and I have talked about this a lot, but when you and I spoke last summer, you have a solution that, just from an intuitive perspective, really struck me with what you're trying to do and why it's so important and so valuable. So why don't you give the audience, if you don't mind, just a little bit about who you are and what exactly Engagement Agents is.
Sure. So, I mean, my background's been in the retail e-commerce space for about 15 years. And 3 years ago, I was fortunate enough to join a 85-store retail chain that has a number of locations in Canada and the U.S., and part of my role was to help drive new traffic into the stores as well as existing traffic. And one thing that I discovered was that this retail chain was paying pretty significant dollars into their lease agreements for what the shopping centers would call shopping center marketing fund or mall advertising fund, or even as part of their common area maintenance. And it would wound up being about 20% of our lease dollars.
Okay.
And we weren't really doing anything with it. So it kind of became a bit of a challenge to basically start to work with these 85 shopping centers. And literally it was me having 85 conversations with 85 shopping centers about the same thing 85 times. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the light bulb went on to figure out there's got to be a better way to do this.
And so where did you go from there?
So basically what I wound up doing is really try and understand how it works today. So for example, in our specific case with our 85 stores, there was generally this, I'll say, onus of responsibility for us to think our store managers were doing it. But one of the things that we found out, which again, I didn't know when I was at this company at the time, was that we didn't allow external internet access or email access to our employees for security reasons. Mm. So it didn't really make sense to have 85 store managers doing the same thing. And in our current environment, it would have then been expected that the store manager would go home at 10 o'clock at night, reach out to the mall marketing manager and tell them what's going on for the weekend, which wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I wound up actually talking to a number of retailers I knew from my previous retail and e-commerce experience. And as a general comment, every retailer struggled with the same problem about they really couldn't figure out a good way to engage their shopping centers' marketing channels. And then when I talked to a lot of the shopping centers, they would always say that they generally go around. So, for example, let's say on this past Columbus Day weekend or Thanksgiving long weekend here in Canada, that a couple weeks before those weekends, the shopping center marketing managers go around to their stores, ask them what they're going to have going on Thanksgiving or Columbus Day, because presumably almost every retailer had something. And generally what would happen is the malls would get a fraction of the retailers participating. And the general comment was always, it's like pulling teeth trying to get content from the retailers. And the shopping centers want that content because obviously they want to promote what's exciting and what's new and what's going on at the shopping center, which is arguably the content is really the retailers in the shopping center for, in most cases, to drive traffic and sales back to the shopping center and its retailers.
Sean, the 20% of the lease expense, that really kind of struck me when you mentioned that for the retailers in, is that traditionally mall-based retailers, I'm assuming, but what did that look like in terms of what the options were for marketing engagement for each of those retailers when you were working back for that retailer? And then now, what does that look like? What is that 20% getting them, or what are the offerings available?
Sure. So, I mean, the 20%, just to be clear, was specific for our 85-store retail chain. I mean, it's probably mm-hmm. going to vary depending on the size of retailer, both in either square footage or number of stores.
Sure.
So an anchor may be paying more, they may be paying less, depends. But at the end of the day, I feel like every shopping center and every retailer has a blanket statement and say, yep, like the retailer is contributing to the success of the shopping center's marketing through some of those lease dollars.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, which is a bit of a bigger challenge, is that there's really no industry standard. So for example, if you look at 85 shopping centers, there's a suite of marketing services that they'll generally offer their retailers that are free, if you will. So, mm-hmm. hey, retailer, we'll promote your new arrival or your sale that's going on through our website, our app, our social media, our email campaigns, our in-mall digital signage if we have it. Some shopping centers may have a third party that manages the in-mall digital sign, so they might want to charge the retailer. Other shopping centers don't have any in-mall digital signage, so they can't offer that. So it's a real smorgasbord.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a set of marketing services that a shopping center might want to charge the retailer for. So, hey, retailer, if you want to paint our shopping center doors your brand's color and promote your new collection, it's going to cost you X dollars. Or if you want to put up a 100-by-100 poster in the middle of the shopping center, it's going to cost you Y dollars.
Got it.
At the end of the day, for most retailers, so just as a general number, on average, about 90% of retailers don't engage in what they're already paying for.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we're trying to do is help the retailers maximize and monetize those already paid for marketing channels. And then sure, that could open up the door if a retailer says, okay, we want to put the pedal to the metal a little bit more at these shopping centers, and we're going to do other marketing initiatives with those shopping centers that are fee-based, fine. But at the end of the day, 90% of retailers aren't taking advantage of what they're already paying for, which that's where we sort of believe there's a huge opportunity for the retailers and the shopping centers.
And that's where
ultimately the consumer.
Right. And that's where the crux of this, right, is that there's this marketing activity that malls want to do, which mm-hmm. God knows malls definitely want to do it right now,
right,
to try to drive traffic into their locations. And a lot of times the retailers are paying for it, but it's just, at the end of the day, it becomes a very hard operational problem for retailers and the malls to coordinate on to make sure that it's optimal for everyone involved. So how does Engagement Agents, your company now, how does that fit into this whole mix? What is it specifically that you guys do? How do retailers and malls work with you to kind of get around some of those problems?
Sure. So basically, the simplest way to explain it is a retailer will use engagement agents as their content distribution platform out to their shopping centers. So a retailer can go in once, upload their content. So in the simplest form would be whatever they're featuring, let's say, in their store window. So they're really taking their existing content because they've already created a campaign, they've paid to get it designed, they've printed the posters that are going to go into the store, or the printed material that's going to go in the store and the store window, and they've paid, let's say, their visual store manager to put up and create the store to mimic whatever their promotion is. So the retailer basically take their content, upload it into our platform. We basically have all the rules and requirements for all the shopping centers that the retailer is located within. So image sizes, which could vary shopping center by shopping center. Some shopping centers might require 4, 5, or 6 different image sizes to support all their different marketing initiatives. The retailer can also then go in and slice and dice and say, okay, this is our campaign for Columbus Day, and this is only for our U.S. stores. This is our campaign for our Canadian stores for Thanksgiving Day. And we basically do all the slicing and dicing and heavy lifting and dirty work to get that campaign out to the shopping centers automatically. The campaigns are then tracked, so there's a level of tracking built in, so the retailer can, in effect, now have a bit of visualization and transparency into what's happening at each shopping center. So they're really taking that onus off every store manager, in theory, doing the same thing multiple times. And ultimately, the objective would be for a retailer now to help them make better business and marketing decisions, even on a localized or hyper local level.
What's the response been like from the retailers that you've worked with? What's the biggest advantage that they see from this?
There's really two things, Anne. So one would be the incremental lift in impressions, traffic, and sales, and whether that goes to their stores, e-commerce channels, or social media channels. And two would be on the money, time, and resource savings of, as we call it, having, let's say, somebody at their head office doing this the old-fashioned way, or again, having, let's say, 100 store managers doing the same thing 100 times, because there's obviously a cost of salaries and resources, and do you want the store managers either trying to provide more customer service to two extra people in that time period, or stock the floor, or do you really want to have 100 store managers doing the same thing 100 times, which arguably is inefficient and ineffective, and it still doesn't provide the retailer with the insight to know what actually happened.
Yeah, in a true start of fashion, it sounds like you've had to compile a lot of data across the landscape to try to put together this content management system across what all the requirements would be for some of these mall purveyors. So talk to us a little bit about that, how much blood, sweat, and tears have had to go into this, Sean, over the last few years to make that a reality.
I appreciate that. So, I mean, it's like any startup, I mean, it's been challenging to obviously get going, but I believe we're on the right path. We're working with a number of retailers now across North America. In fact, we've got a few retailers that are international that are using the platform. I think the real challenge has been just the awareness factor for a lot of retailers, because from what we found, the non-working capital, which is generally held by the leasing teams, because the leasing teams are the ones that are signing the lease deals, that quite honestly, a lot of the retailer marketing teams aren't necessarily aware that the company or the retailer itself is actually paying for these opportunities. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little more, because that actually was one of the main reasons that when we first spoke that I wanted to find a way to highlight you guys, because it is about awareness. And I know in our conversations, like, talk to us a little bit. What are the dynamics of who actually owns this in a retailer? Like, where does it actually fall? Does it fall in one area? Does it fall across a number of different areas? You know, why is it difficult for retailers to manage this, operationalize it, and keep it consistently going day in and day out?
Sure, it's a great question. So I think there's really three different potential stakeholders. So okay. One, as I mentioned, is arguably the leasing team, because they're arguably aware of the cost that they're bearing as part of the lease agreements for the mall marketing or the shopping center marketing. Mm-hmm. And when I say shopping centers, it could be outlets, lifestyle centers, open air centers, traditional malls, et cetera. So running the gamut. Mm-hmm. And then two, in some cases, it could be store operations. Mm-hmm. And three, it arguably falls in most cases, at least from what we've seen in marketing. It's just, you get into this, I guess with a lot of the retailers is a bit of a gray area, because again, traditionally the retailer might have put that responsibility or assumed that responsibility is being handled at the local store level, because it's the local store manager building the relationship with the local mall marketing manager. Mm-hmm. But then, as we know, a store manager might either move around in that company, so they could go to a different shopping center, a different location, and that relationship goes with it. Or maybe the contact at the shopping center changes and that relationship goes along with it. And again, we all know that the store managers are generally doing a lot of things already, and to add this other thing to their plate, it may or may not get done. So it's really a bit of a gray area of who owns this, which I think goes back to where we feel we can be a tremendous value to the retailers, because at the end of the day, when you look at what we've used as a benchmark, which is about 90% of retailers aren't engaging in their malls or their shopping centers marketing channels, I think this is just an industry-wide problem that the retailers aren't necessarily taking advantage of it.
Right. And that makes sense. You outlined that really well. It really crosses three different areas, whether it's the real estate, the leasing teams, the store operations, or the marketers. And those roles change around a lot too, so it's hard to keep consistency. So you almost need a solution or something like what you provide to provide that level of constancy to try to make these efforts as best you can, as best they can be out in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sean, as we're starting to look at, you know, how the malls are evolving and your company is evolving at Engagement Agents, what does the future look like for you guys as you're thinking about the next, you know, couple of months to a year and then the next 3 years?
Sure. So great question. So I think we've all been, reading these headlines of whether you can believe them or not about the retail apocalypse or a corruption in the market. I don't think the shopping centers, I mean, sure, there might be some that are going to come and go, no different than retailers. I was at a shopping center this weekend in Canada, and I was blown away. Like, the traffic there was just uncanny. Like, it was great mm-hmm. to see. And, I mean, I think that kind of goes back to the whole sort of scare tactic of the retail apocalypse. I do think as the shopping centers and retailers evolve, that there's going to be more and more marketing initiatives that have to happen to, again, give people that reason to come into the shopping center or the retailer and experience something versus just going online.
Mm-hmm.
And other, other non shopping center based retailers. So I'll give you one example. So we do a benchmark study during key shopping periods, and using Amazon Prime Day as an example, that in Canada and the US, using the top 10 shopping centers as a benchmark, there was only really 10% of the retailers engaged in their shopping centers marketing channels. And as a objectively speaking, I mean, I think every retailer knew the Amazon Prime Day train was coming down the track months in advance. So mm-hmm. I guess the assumption would be that for both retailers and those shopping centers, you'd want to try to do whatever you can to try to get people or encourage them to come into the retailer and into the shopping center on Amazon Prime Day versus handing Amazon Prime Day more sales, if you will.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or even the weekend before Prime Day.
Right.
You know, how do you preempt
exactly.
it too? Exactly. Right. So what's next for you guys? Where do you think you head in the next, you know, few years? How does the solution continue to evolve?
So we're working on, we're really working on building the relationships with the retailers, because again, there's just so many retailers out there and we're just scratching the surface. We have started to really work with our customers to add other features and functionality. So as an example, a retailer's HR team really has the same challenge. So every shopping center will have a in-mall or online career section where they can help retailers fill their talent pipeline with hopefully the right type of employee.
Right.
Again, same challenge with lack of engagement and missed opportunities. And I know everybody realizes retail is a tough market to be hiring and finding the right talent. So we do help retailers with that. And there's a few other challenges we're solving in the retail shopping center ecosystem.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm so excited to have you on the program, because if you are in retail right now, and if you happen to be in real estate, store operations or marketing, or even as you just mentioned, possibly HR in the longer term, take a look at these guys. Take a look at Engagement Agents, because they're doing something. They're serving an unmet need in the marketplace. And retailers, quite frankly, you're already paying for the service you can provide, but you're not optimizing it in the way you should be. So if you happen to be in one of those functions and you're listening to this conversation, check them out. Where can they find you, Sean?
So they can find us at engagementagents.com, or they can reach me directly at Sean, so S-E-A-N, at engagementagents.com.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, man. Well, are you ready to close it up? We're going to do our segment, How Millennial Are You?
Sounds good.
All right. Now, for those of you listening, if you haven't heard this before, this is the segment we do or try to do as often as we can to close the show. And we do it because we believe that curiosity is an important thing as we try to navigate this retail apocalypse. And so we do that in a game we call How Millennial Are You? It's akin to what you would see on Inside the Actor Studio with James Lipton. It's a series of questions we ask, and it's not necessarily to gauge how old you are, but again, to gauge how curious you are. And so, Sean, we've got four questions. They're standard. We ask everyone the same question. So far, I would say no one has hit the millennial game out of the park, so who knows? Maybe you'll be the first. But let's start with question number one. Do you still have cable?
No, I do not.
You do not? Okay. How long ago did you cut the cord?
Oh, boy. Probably been about 7 years ago, maybe.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that might win the how millennial are you.
That's definitely
the longest cord cutting experience we've heard of.
Man, that's fantastic. All right, question number two. Let's say you're going out to dinner and you forgot your wallet. Or maybe you don't carry a wallet, and you're out to dinner with some friends, and the bill comes, and you have to decide how you're going to pay. How do you make sure everyone gets paid back?
I guess it would be one of two things. One, in Canada we have Interact, which is basically our version of debit, so arguably I could do an email money transfer, or I'd like to think I have good enough relationships that I can probably just have a quote-unquote virtual IOU voucher, and I'll pick up the tab the next time.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah, I love that too. Like, why do we always have to pay each other back?
Yes.
Let's just get each other's backs. Yeah, for sure, exactly. But that's awesome. That sounds very millennial. So nice work on that with the digital email payment process. All right, question number three. If you had the option, what would you choose? Say, a brand new car, or would you choose a luxury vacation?
Oh, so this is admittedly probably a bit of a tough one. I guess I'd say with cars, two things. Is one, I'm more of just getting to point A, point B, obviously, you know, safely. Two, I guess, just in terms of trying to enjoy more experiences. So I'd probably have to say I'd go with the vacation.
Nice. Any spots in particular?
Somewhere warm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Canada, but... Snow is coming soon. Winter is coming.
Oh, yes.
Nice. I was just there last week. It is very cold. Very cold indeed. Fantastic. All right. You so far, my friend, are 3 for 3. So let's see if we can get you out of here on number 4.
All right.
All right. This one gets a little more personal. What kind of mattress do you sleep on? Are you sleeping on the traditional box spring, or have you already switched and gone the way of, say, one of these direct-to-consumer memory foam mattresses?
So I am traditional box spring.
Oh, all right. Three for four.
That's all right.
I haven't gone down the route of direct-to-consumer one yet.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't either. Anne has, but I have not. So I'm still, I guess, what, Gen X or even Baby Boomer on that one. Who knows? But anyway, well, thanks, man. That was a ton of fun. You did really well, I'd say, relatively speaking to everyone else. But thanks for joining our program today. Again, if you want to learn more about it, go check out Engagement Agents. This has been Sean Snyder, president of Engagement Agents. Sean, thanks again for being on the program. And on behalf of Anne, as always, to our listeners out there, be careful out there.